This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Hundreds of jobs leaving downtown Cincinnati as Macy's packs up its corporate headquarters here amid company changes. Macy's chairman and CEO Jeff Gennette explained the motivation during this week's Investors Day presentation.
We all know that America is over-malled and over-retailed. We see a bifurcation of malls, with the lower-tier malls continuing to decline rapidly and the healthier malls beginning to stabilize with investment from their developers. America loves to shop, but our customers shop differently than they did 3 years ago. They have set the bar high on retail experience, both in-store and online. They expect to be able to move and transact seamlessly between stores, .com, and mobile. Fast and free shipping is becoming the norm, and clear value is required. The retail environment is moving faster than we are, and we knew we needed a clear vision and an updated strategy and plan that would both reset the cost base of the business and significantly speed up the metabolism of the organization. We are clear-eyed about the challenges in front of us and are working with urgency to change the trajectory of our business. And if we execute our plan well, I'm confident that we can stabilize profitability and cash flow in 2020 and then be back on a path to profitable growth.
Again, that was Macy's chairman and CEO Jeff Gennette speaking during the company's Investors Day presentation. Earlier this week, we previewed what Macy's may announce at that event with Bloomberg's senior U.S. retail analyst Poonam Goyal. She talked to us again after that call to weigh in on whether investors responded positively.
So they will be closing 125 stores, and you know, through that they will be lots of jobs that are being lost. But they did say at the analyst meeting that they will try to relocate a lot of those employees where they can in nearby stores and in other positions. That said, you know, not everyone will be able to keep their job given just the amount of store closings that we're seeing. But overall, for the company, it sets them to be in a better position for the future.
What was the response from investors?
I mean, look, everyone is applauding the fact that they are moving forward with the right strategy, at least it seems for now. I think it's all going to depend on execution, right? So how well will they execute against their strategy? And will they be able to deliver sustained top-line growth once they're through it?
And again, that was Bloomberg senior U.S. retail analyst Poonam Goyal. She spoke to us on Wednesday in a pre-recorded interview. And now for local perspective on the Macy's news. Cincinnati Edition's Friday News Review begins with WCPO reporter Dan Monk. Dan, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And we also have with us from the Cincinnati Inquirer, columnist Byron McCauley. Byron, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
We have here in the studio with us reporter Alex Coolidge. Alex, thank you for being with us.
Hey there.
And joining us on the phone is Inquirer reporter Jeff Cease. Jeff, thank you as well.
Thank you.
If you have questions or comments about the Macy's situation here in town, give us a call while these very talented journalists are with us. 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and tweets and try to get some of those into the show as well. So Dan Monk from WCPO, we start with you. We heard Jeff Gennette, the CEO of Macy's, say there that basically, the retail industry is possibly moving faster than Macy's as an organization is. Based on your reporting and your insight on this situation, how did that happen?
Well, I think it's actually been a 40-year trend, you know, as department stores have kind of ceded the market to big box retailers, specialty retailers. And so the retail industry has been fragmenting, you know, for decades now. That accelerated because of online players like Amazon. Then Walmart responded with its own online, commerce model. So I think the trend is getting faster, but the trend has been in place for 40 years now.
Alex Coolidge from the Cincinnati Inquirer, what is the impact here locally? We are losing hundreds of jobs, it looks like.
The Northgate Mall is one of the casualties of the initial 30 named locations, stores that are getting axed. And then they're going to identify the remainder of the 125 that they're targeting, you know, through the next 3 years. Their pattern in the past has been to wait for leases to expire and then, you know, just shut down stores there.
And so it looks like the Northgate Mall location is the only location identified in
so
this
far.
Region
right.
that will be shuttering. So there
right.
are a few other locations, Kenwood and Florence, just to name a couple. Those are not on a list currently. But what about the headquarters situation in downtown?
The headquarters is going to be a gut punch. For about 25, 30 years, Macy's has maintained a dual headquarter strategy. And up until about 2000, into the early 2000s, the CEO was based here. Macy's historically was Federated Department Stores, which was an amalgamation of several regional department store chains. And basically it operated department stores like Kroger does. Kroger has several banners and subsidiaries. It owns Ralph's in California. There aren't any Ralph's here, and that's how Macy's operated. Well, they were so successful, they actually purchased Macy's out of bankruptcy, which was this New York department store that had, bottomed out. They bought it out in the early 90s. And then but gradually, as sort of regional names, it just became very clear that the regional names didn't really have any sort of local cachet. People like their Ralphs. People like their King Supers grocery stores in their little neighborhoods. They didn't feel that way about department stores. There wasn't that loyalty, they decided. So they said, well, what if we just rebranded everything and used our most famous name, and we'd save a fortune on advertising and sure make things a lot easier. And that's what happened basically in the early to mid 2000s.
And that's when we stopped seeing names like McAlpin's.
McAlpin's was a different chain of.
Oh, no, that was the Dillard. They went to Dillard's.
Yeah,
Lazarus.
They got a
Lazarus
again,
is who
again,
I'm thinking of.
The ongoing theme for department stores for, narrative story has for decades has been consolidation. I mean, this is really just a culmination of. But then what happens is Macy's corporate Federated changes its name to Macy's Incorporated. And then after Jim Zimmerman stepped down in the early 2000s, the next two CEOs, including Jeff Gennett, are sort of New York guys. And the way they divided the dual headquarter functions was merchandising and marketing and all the sort of fun stuff was in New York, which made sense. I mean, that's where you're going to have buyers for choosing the new lines and all that stuff. And, it makes sense to have the advertising there as well. But then the support functions were here. So the HR department was here. The legal department was here. The accounting department was here. And it was all, right down the street from here, a few blocks away. And we had maybe more than 1,000 jobs, right downtown in that building. But it's been gradually thinning out as Macy's over the last, several years has been trying to get leaner and meaner. And at a certain point, the rationale for maintaining a second HQ in Cincinnati kind of wore out, I guess.
Yeah. We're going to talk a little bit about some of these historic connections. That's why we have Jeff Cease on the phone, and I'm going to get to some of that coming up. But but first, Byron McCauley, a Cincinnati Inquirer columnist, you analyzed the Macy's departure here with a column whose headline is "Macy's headquarters leaving downtown Cincinnati signals it's time to embrace a new economy." And that's what it sounds like Macy's itself is trying to do. So how does downtown Cincinnati work towards that goal?
Well, as Dan said and as Alex said, this is a trend that's been going on for a very long time in retail. Macy's and retail and, brick-and-mortar stores, that's an old line economy, and that's something that our city historically, we've sort of been looked at as innovators in Cincinnati. And so what I was talking about in that column is we have to start to embrace some different kinds of industry. Just as we looked at P&G as an innovator years ago, and even Kroger as an innovator years ago, we have to start looking at what's gonna grow for the next 100 years here, not just the old brick and mortar. You know, there was a time when Cincinnati outranked Chicago in almost everything. Chicago chose the railroad infrastructure. Cincinnati did not. And that's why you see Chicago booming and Cincinnati sort of staying. Here we are. We've got 6 Fortune 500 companies in town right now. And that's a decrease from probably a half dozen or so.
So when you talk about the new industries, though, right. that might Tech. Catapult or at least move Absolutely. Cincinnati forward, specifically, what are we thinking about?
So I'm thinking about specifically tech. I'm thinking about some of the sort of logistics companies that we have here as well that are growing. But primarily, I'm thinking about tech. And we are lucky that we do have for the last, I don't know, I guess 13 years or so, Sensei Tech has been doing a really good job at funding some tech infrastructure, helping startups that some startup tech companies here in Cincinnati, and we're starting to get sort of a groundswell a little bit right now. Sensei Tech portfolio companies, you know, there are 1,200 people who are working in Sensei Tech portfolio companies now. That was not the case in 2007. Those are the kind of industries that I think we need to start embracing more and growing, and the capital that and the cash that some of our that we do have in this town. I was encouraging the funding and to start to support having the capital and the energy and the people who can support those innovative ideas that are coming along and say, hey, let's invest in something new because they could be the next some of our great companies in this town. And we've always played above our playing weight in Cincinnati. So we do have an opportunity. And I think this is the time.
We will continue to explore the potential impact of Macy's departure on Cincinnati, the departure of the headquarters. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. I'm joined today by WCPO reporter Dan Monk. And from the Cincinnati Inquirer, I have with me Alex Coolidge and Byron McCauley in the studio. And on the phone is reporter Jeff Cease. And Jeff, you explored sort of Cincinnati's historic connection to department stores. And does this departure of the Macy's headquarters put an end to that story?
To a large degree, you know, the local department stores, you know, every major city had their dry goods stores that became big department stores. And you know, New York had Macy's and Cincinnati had Shillitoe's and Pogue's and some of those. And the Lazarus family came from Columbus and started the Federated and brought their headquarters here in 1945, I believe, and had absorbed Shillitoe's. And so some of that Lazarus Shillitoe's connections became really part of the Cincinnati history in stores. And a lot of people still have fond memories of going downtown to go to these big department stores when there was an event to shop at Christmas time and things like that. Now, most of the stores are long gone, but, you know, with Federated, now Macy's leaving their headquarters, that's kind of the end of that connection. But, you know, there's not only the memories, but there was the other impact that these companies had and the families. Like the Lazarus family was really a big art supporter in Cincinnati. And so that kind of legacy still continues.
And Dan, from WCPO, you also explored the history of Federated in some of your reporting. How impactful was this company on the region, and what does it mean now that it's basically gone from this city?
Well, here's, I think, one example. If you look on their website, Macy's website, you see 39 charities from Cincinnati that they give money to. Look on Columbus, and you see 6. So that's one example of the impact that a headquarters can have on your city, a lot more contributions. Plus, like he just mentioned, the Lazarus family, it wasn't just the Lazarus folks who ran Federated for decades. It was Tom Cody and CEO Zimmerman. Sorry, you just mentioned him. Yeah. So, I mean, these guys were civic giants in Cincinnati during their time. And if you look on the Chamber's Great Living Cincinnatian page, you find four Macy's or Federated executives who are listed among the most impactful business leaders we've ever had. No other company has more except for Procter & Gamble, which has 10. So, you know, that's a big loss when you have that kind of impact for that period of time, and it's gone forever. However, you know, Macy's is still employing about 3,000 people in this region, and I think the headquarters employees that remain, the 500 or so that remain downtown, 470, the company told me, are going to be transferred to Springdale. So the actual job loss from this particular announcement is not as big as it might first appear. We still have a big commitment from Macy's in Cincinnati. I don't think the cuts are over. I mean, I think they're going to close more stores in Cincinnati, and I think they're going to close more than 125 stores nationwide, maybe not in 3 years, but they're going to have to close more stores because if you just look at the numbers, the 150 stores that they identify as their best performing, they average $83 million a year. The 125 stores that they say they're going to close in the next 3 years, those average $11 million a year. That leaves 500 stores that average $22 million. So if Macy's is going to survive long term, they need all of their stores to be more like those 150. And, you know, right now they have 500 that are operating at less than 30% of that level.
So possibly more shuttering down the line.
Also, I mean, their business, this is part of an evolution of the business. A quarter of Macy's sales are online. That's $6 billion. That's a Fortune 500 company by itself. I mean, they're not – this is not so much them being just being caught epically flat-footed. This is just change in an industry, and they're executing it. Because of their very close tie to Cincinnati, it just sort of hits us particularly in two ways. I mean, the 125 stores that they're going to cut, that's about 100 jobs per store. You're talking about 12,000 jobs evaporating, you know, across the country. And then the 2,000 jobs that they cut, that they announced that they're going to cut, they specifically said, oh, by the way, those are administrative jobs. And they have 22,000 nationwide. It's going to be 20. So that's about a 9% cutting. They're going to shift 500 jobs from downtown, from the downtown headquarters, up to a Springdale office facility. They are being very noncommittal about how much of that represents a pure transfer versus how many cuts that will be.
So we'll have to
Some more analysis. I don't have a current figure for how many people actually work downtown. The city hasn't volunteered the number. Macy's is sure as heck not answering that direct question.
They did tell me that the Springdale headcount is going to rise to 750 or 950.
Yeah.
And it's now at 480. So
yeah,
that means 500
jobs are definitely going up there. So that's a good news. That's retention, of course.
But how many don't leave from downtown too?
Exactly.
And that's also retention. You're still losing any tax benefit, I suppose.
For the downtown.
Exactly. Yeah.
And you're also flooding the downtown market with,
Significant piece of office
space. It's called Class A, but it's called that because of the location, not because of the beautiful interiors. And I've seen them, and it's like, okay, this reminds me of the 90s.
And this sort of speaks to what Byron was talking about in his column, is that the city should, I guess, pivot its energy towards less attention, perhaps, for these Fortune 500 type companies and more attention on maybe smaller tech or larger logistic types.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, what I also talked about in that column is what's going to be our centers of excellence. You know, we've got them in this town. We have a first-rate medical community in this town, and medicine is always on the cutting edge of technology, especially the fact that we have a research hospital here and a first-rate children's hospital. You know, all those really matter when you start to look at what our economic infrastructure looks like. So we're going to have to really pivot, and we have to find out what the next sustainable long-term business is going to be in this town that we can latch on to, grow, support, and replace, because these old line businesses, they're not going to be here for a long time.
And Jeff Cease from the Inquirer is on the phone with us. Your reporting did explore those heritage department store businesses here. I suppose there is then some type of examples from the past of how buildings have been reused when they previously had the names of some of these famous department stores, or at least some of their street level spaces. Did you learn anything while digging through this about the potential that you might have for Macy's based on what you learned about those old department stores?
Well, a lot of those department stores, you know, were pretty aged at the time they closed. Like the old Maybelline Carew was torn down for where they put the Lazarus Macy's by Fountain Square, because they had some urban renewal plans at those times. The only one of the old stores, really, I mean, not counting Carew Tower, which had housed Maybelline Carew and Pogues at different times, is the Alms and Deputy Building, which is the Family Services Building, or one of the government buildings out on Central Parkway. But it's a huge building. I mean, and that's a little bit different case than offices and things like that, because I think the Macy's headquarters is really more of a office space that necessarily won't remind folks of, you know, downtown shopping.
So we have Macy's leaving avoid downtown in a couple of different ways, right? So they're vacating this large tower, this office tower. Is there any other business in that building, by the way, or is it all entirely Macy's? Do we know?
No, there's some sort of medical something.
Okay,
Macy's is active on the top. Another problem to watch with this building is also the building is. I mean, some of the early signs that Macy's was going to take off was they sold the parking lot to, I think, the Port Authority, and then Macy's only owns like the top 8 floors of that tower, and I think it's like 20, 22 stories, that type of thing.
Okay, so the whole building's not going to be empty then?
No.
But there is also...
There's got to be a lot of empty
space. Exactly. That's a lot. 8 floors is a lot of empty space, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
So they're going to have to work to replace that. But also, the company closed its downtown store about a year and a half ago now, I suppose.
No, we're still waiting for stuff on that as well.
And we don't know what's going to happen to that.
Not quite yet.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll be watching to see what happens with this tower and what might happen. Do we have any prospects that might be coming in?
Well, there is actually one other thing on just the jobs front. Again, there's like 4 things to, again, because we're so tied to Macy's, there's 4 different places on jobs. Macy's is also consolidating its call centers. So it whacked something out in Arizona, and we're getting those jobs. So what they refer to as their Mason call center, which is actually in Deerfield Township, is going to hire about 600 people. So we're getting call center jobs. We're transferring about 500 jobs from downtown to Springfield. We're losing an undisclosed number of administrative jobs, whatever the balance is, shy of 500. And then we're losing the Northgate store. That's 140 people out of work there. So it's lots of moving parts with this deal.
I talked to a site search consultant who said that Cincinnati could benefit from some national trends. A lot of finance companies are now looking to relocate to lower cost labor markets, and we would benefit from that. He said advanced manufacturing is a possibility because companies are reshoring. They're coming back to the U.S. because of the tax cuts. And he thinks there is a possibility that we could get what he called a trophy employer, not just for Cincinnati, but specifically for that space. And he said there are projects that are active right now that he thinks could be a good fit for Cincinnati.
And I suppose it may be important to note that when you are trading high-paying white-collar jobs for call center positions, it's not exactly replacing the tax base that you're
right.
losing.
Yeah.
You're losing. That's right. A losing game.
Well, let me wrap with this. Byron, we've talked about the Macy's Tower. vacating eight floors. Mm-hmm. And we know the Macy's downtown location has long been closed. We just lost the booksellers down there. And so there's been some negative trends, I guess, emerging from the central business district. Mm-hmm. Is everything okay downtown?
You know, there is some good news downtown. We are starting, you know, we had a new grocery store that opened. I don't know if you heard about that.
I did hear about that. I think you were on to talk about that with us one day.
Uh-huh. And we are having an increasing amount of people who are relocating, living downtown, both young and, you know, empty nesters. So it's sort of like there's a little bit of an effect going on here, a little kind of a circular effect. You have some, you have people who are downtown that haven't moved downtown before, and you've got several new kind of venues that are going up downtown. There's a music venue going up downtown.
Yeah, right? So there's going to be amenities, but what about like the old shopping experience?
But the shopping experience, you don't have that anymore. The shopping experience, the shopping experience is more of people getting items at their doorstep of their apartment.
I think that's such an interesting trend in the urban revitalization around the region is that, yes, more bars, more restaurants, cool homes to live in and all that.
Cool homes.
Not a lot of shopping going on.
No, you're not going to find that nice dress or suit in the window to go buy to get you in there. So,
well, we'll see if that comes back. Like these glasses we're all wearing today are coming back in style. If only our listeners could
see
us.
Stylish.
I want to thank WCPO reporter Dan Monk, Inquirer columnist Byron McCauley, apologies, and reporters Alex Coolidge and Jeff Cease for being with us. Appreciate the conversation.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks, and we continue the Friday News Review with some members of the WVXU news team. We've got reporter and midday host Ann Thompson. Hi, Ann.
Hi, Michael.
We also have with us reporters Ambriel Crutchfield. Hi, Ambriel.
Hello.
And Tana Weingartner. Hi, Tana.
Hiya.
Where's the music?
We're
music,
it's,
Michael.
It's Lady Heavy in here, and they have requested Run the World by Beyonce, as in Girls Run the World, and I guess I forgot to alert our... I promise that wasn't a sexist decision. We'll work on this next week when you all gather with me again. We'll get that song queued up, although I don't know how we pay for the licensing on that.
Yeah, it's in the public sphere, I'm saying.
You're going to have to grovel for more money in the next fund drive to cover that Beyonce bill. But let's talk about the coronavirus first before we have too much fun, and then we'll have
Sounds
a little fun
cheery.
At the end.
Let's do it.
Well, it did end up being good news out of Miami
it
University.
Did, yes.
So last week we had heard that a couple of students were being monitored after visiting China and possibly showing some symptoms that needed to be observed. Right. Turns out, no coronavirus.
No coronavirus. Their test results came back negative. They were notified probably just before the Super Bowl started. Miami held a news conference along with the Ohio Department of Health during the Super Bowl.
I know. It was very strange timing.
Yeah, a lot of people, it made people kind of go, oh, are they trying to, you know, drop bad news during the Super Bowl? But they had said previously, you know, as soon as we get the results, we'll hold a news conference. And I think, personally, I think the timing probably just worked out that way because they had to allow time for people from Ohio Department of Health to get from Columbus to Oxford, along with, you know, some media came down from Dayton, Oxford, people came down from Cleveland. So.
And so what's the status of the two students there now? Are they free to roam about the place?
Yep, they were released from isolation as soon as they got the results. They said the students were very thrilled. They had done everything right. They were allowed to go out and rematriculate, I guess. But they're also not telling us who those students are, you know, to protect their privacy. So we don't really know much about them.
Was there anything else coming out of the campus about more monitoring or any type of precautions that they're encouraging students to take while?
Well, I think it's just general precautions in general that you, of course, you know, for flu, because that's really a bigger concern for everybody right now, health-wise, than coronavirus. But, you know, wash your hands, of course, cover your mouth when you're sneezing or coughing, those kinds of things. Ohio is investigating one more potential case. Now, they're not saying where in the state it is, you know, again, to protect privacy and to not sort of spark.
But it could be in any part of the state at this point.
It could be in any part of the state. And they're only going to update on Tuesdays and Thursdays unless they get the results and it necessitates a more immediate update. Whoever this person is, they're being monitored by their local health department. They're in isolation. Their contacts are being checked and everything, we're told.
While coronavirus is probably relatively new as a term for many of us, apparently, Ann Thompson, it's not new to the researchers at Ohio State University.
Ohio State researchers have been studying it for decades. They've been studying different strains, not the most current strain. And according to researcher Scott Kenny, that possibly will have a vaccine for the most recent strain in about 4 months. The one he is studying hasn't spread to humans yet, but he says, you know what? It was kind of about time for something, unfortunately, like this new novel coronavirus, because remember SARS, MERS, he says it happens like about once a decade.
Okay, so why this virus? Is there a reason that these particular researchers have spent so much time looking at this?
Well, I guess it's just, you know, very important. It could be, obviously very serious when it comes to SARS and MERS. And to be honest, I didn't really ask him, why are you studying this?
Yeah,
but it seems very important and local angle to the coronavirus.
And important to note that in your reporting, you said that they said not to panic.
That's correct. He said, you know, you don't have to go like wearing masks or anything. As Tana was mentioning, the flu is, you know, affecting many more people. But he says, you know, if you're sick, just stay at home. But no, you don't have to go out and be wearing masks or anything like that.
And this is just anecdotal, but have you seen any masks around town here in the Cincinnati area?
I haven't.
I was traveling and I saw some people at the airport.
I have not seen any around here either. I was in LA a couple of weeks ago, though, and they have a much larger immigrant population than we do. And I did see, at least it was noticeable to me because I'm not used to seeing that. So,
I actually saw, this is really off base, but Naomi Campbell on her YouTube said like how she travels. And so she does wear a mask too. So it seems to be a thing, even not surrounding
even outside of the virus.
Yeah,
interesting.
That is interesting. Okay, we'll continue to play that safe regardless and keep you updated on the latest with the virus locally. In other health news, Ambriel, you covered a story about some local high school filmmakers who are encouraging their fellow young people not to use vaping products.
That's correct.
Who are these students?
Yeah, so they're from across the Cincinnati area. The director I spoke to said they come as far as Monroe down to Fourth Wall Studios, which is an OTR. And basically they were reached out to by St. Elizabeth and Arts Wave to do this project. What better person to promote not vaping than young people speaking to young people? It was actually kind of interesting because when they were telling me like how they wrote the script, it was based on their personal experiences. But the ending, they, you know, normally when we see PSAs, it's always like, don't vape, don't smoke kind of thing. But they didn't want to take that traditional approach because they felt like that's kind of an adult approach to telling someone not to do something, and that probably wouldn't resonate with middle schoolers. So they're going to do an alternative ending, which is more the person is still trying to decide what they want to do, if they are going to vape or if they're not. And I know that there was a little conversation of like, oh, maybe we should kind of wrap this up and say like, don't. But at the end of the day, St. Elizabeth allowed the young people to take control in that way.
And that's very interesting because St. Elizabeth in Northern Kentucky has been part of multiple presentations with the health department about encouraging people not to even touch vaping products and stay away from them. But they gave the kids the freedom here. Mm-hmm. And do the kids believe that their message will resonate better with their peers than an adult in the room pointing their finger at them?
Yeah, I spoke to Kiki Featherson. She goes to Walnut Hills currently, and she was editing everything together. And so it was interesting hearing her story of like how she would go into the bathroom and she's just trying to use the restroom and she'll see people vaping. And so she told me that right after I just saw the filming, and it was the exact same thing. But she said at first she wasn't really like pushing her friends to stop vaping, but now she's definitely going to be a little bit more aggressive.
Where will this PSA be visible?
So that's something that's still kind of up in the air. According to the director I spoke to, I reached out to St. Elizabeth, but haven't heard word back.
Okay, well, we'll let you know when we find out more. And you had a pretty wild story this week. One of your Focus on Technology features, I believe. And
yes,
it's about selfies and how the Tana's already giggling. And I take occasional selfies. And but the cool thing about taking selfies is, you know, you can edit it yourself and make yourself look as good as possible before you put that out on social media. But people are going to the extreme, it sounds like. Tell us what's happening.
Exactly. And so, well, believe it or not, there was a study done, the Journal American Medical Association, as Tana takes a selfie right now as we sit here in the studio. And so, they just asked people, gave them a questionnaire like, are you open to cosmetic procedures? And believe it or not, so the people who are most open to it were white women around age 25. So you would think like,
so
older
they're young,
people.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's kind of what I heard in the place that I went. And there's any number of procedures. You know, some of them make you look better, and some of them actually are more health related, make you feel better. Do you want me to mention some
of
them?
I'd love to.
Okay. So, you know, Michael, you're in very good shape, but maybe there's a certain part of your body that you have trouble just like toning in the gym. So generally, people who are in shape take advantage of what's called M-Sculpt, which uses electromagnetic energy. And I actually tried this like on my stomach, and it feels kind of weird, and it increases your muscle mass while killing off fat cells. Mm. And, you know, more than one treatment is needed. And of course, it doesn't last forever, but it's the equivalent of doing 20,000 crunches in 30 minutes.
Oh my gosh.
Sign me up.
Do we know how much that costs?
I didn't ask.
Okay. That's
fair. It's not
covered
by insurance.
Exactly. People can Google that and figure out there. So it's more than just like facial features, right?
Yeah, exactly. So there's something also dealing with sweating. So, you know, there is a medical condition where, you know, very embarrassing, like you sweat too much. And beyond that, this place was telling me that people, you know, just when they go to the gym, they don't really want to sweat at all. So they don't necessarily have a problem, that they just want to get some of these, you know, sweat glands removed, and it's not like, you know, detrimental or anything. But, you know, there's a long list. Botox, there's a little sign out in the parking lot that says like Botox parking 10 minutes.
It's a fantastic picture. Y'all have to see Ann's story.
I did see that picture as well. And it's just so crazy, the world we live in.
Bladder leakage. Sella, you just sit in a chair and it kind of solves the problem after a number of treatments. Hair transplants, they do it in a different kind of way that is more high tech. And
But what you're finding, though, at least what the reporting is finding, is that people are motivated to pursue these interests based on the number of photos they've taken of themselves. And they're like just critiquing themselves.
Yes, and so a lot younger than, you know, normal, maybe.
I think you can save a lot of money by just getting a good angle. You got to find the right angle, the right lighting, and the right filter. It's so much cheaper, and you'll still get all the Instagram likes you can imagine. Really quickly, something's coming to the 937 area code, Tana, that I remember coming to our neck of the woods down here when Northern Kentucky switched from being a 606 area code to an 859 area code. And then suddenly, if you were calling from across the river, Cincinnati to Kentucky or vice versa, you had to start using all 10 digits.
Right.
And whether it was local or long distance, tell us what's happening in 937.
Yep. Starting Saturday, you have to dial 10 digits, even if you're making a local call, if you're in the 937 area code, because they're getting the 326 overlay. They are going to run out of 937 phone numbers next year or by next year. So, you know, newer numbers at some point are going to start having the 326 area code. So you have to dial the area code. Now, if you're using your mobile phone, you don't have to dial one. If you're dialing long distance, your phone just knows it. But if you are still calling on a landline, you need to add the one if you're calling long distance. And the most interesting, because people who live in that district that zone have known this is coming. You know, you could do 10-digit dialing optionally since like the fall. But the thing that you really need to do is if you have services such as like maybe if you're on dial-up internet or if you have a home security system or if you have pre-programmed numbers in your phones or anything that's doing automated dialing that you maybe haven't even thought about, like especially security systems or home health monitoring, home health aids, you know, like I've fallen and I can't get up, stuff like that, that has numbers pre-programmed. You need to go in and fix those and make sure they have the area code on them now. Otherwise, they're not going to work starting Saturday. So that's the big takeaway.
Great information. This news, all these news stories are online at WVXU.org. Before we let you run off and before we move on to sports with our friend Andy Furman, I want to remind everyone, Janet Jackson is coming to Cincinnati in July. She is going to be headlining the Cincinnati Music Festival. Mm-hmm. It's July 23rd through the 25th. She is on that Saturday, July 25th with the OJs. Mm-hmm. And then Biz Markie's coming to town. Tony, Snoop Dogg.
And Charlie Wilson.
Fantasia.
No Frankie Beverly this year, though, which was the surprise to me and some of my friends. It seems like he's here every year, but not this year.
Maybe he's
no
got
Frankie Beverly
a problem
in the
with Janet. Best concert you've ever attended in Cincinnati, Tana?
Last week, Jacko Pierce.
Just last week?
Yeah.
Ambriel, have you been to a concert in Cincinnati yet?
I have.
All right.
A couple. Okay. I would say Big Frida is the best so far.
Big Frida. Ooh. What about you, Ann? What's your favorite concert you've seen around here?
Well, recently I went to one that kind of had some Beatles. It was like a Beatles anniversary, and it was... I had some big names that I'm just kind of blanking.
That's all right. Sorry. It doesn't matter. All what of your answers you, are wrong anyway. The best concert ever in Cincinnati, 2003, NSYNC, Great American Ballpark.
Oh, goodness.
Tana Weingartner, Ambriel Crutchfield, and Ann Thompson, thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Up next, we're talking about Pete Rose and Michigan State's got their eyeballs on Luke Fickell here at the University of Cincinnati. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. The Friday News Review continues now with a look at sports. Pete Rose, again, wants to be reinstated to Major League Baseball. And UC football coach Luke Fickell, he may be a top target for a new job. Joining us on the phone is sports radio host Andy Furman. Andy, thank you so much for your time today.
Mr. Monks, it's a pleasure as always. The pleasure's all mine.
Listen, what are your thoughts on this Pete Rose situation? He's tried this before, but it almost seems like he's got an interesting argument this time with the Houston Astros sign-stealing scandal not receiving the same repercussions that he received from back in the day. What are your thoughts?
I would think 31 years is enough, and I'll tell you something else. I think Major League Baseball right now looks like they have two sets of rules. One set of rules for Pete Rose and one for everybody else. You got a team like the Houston Astros that threw the World Series, very similar to the 1919 Black Sox. They threw the World Series. They cheated. And think about this. Who got fired? The general manager, the manager, and the players are still going to play. I don't get it. You know, the culprits are playing. It doesn't make any sense. Pete Rose has a shot here. He deserves to be in. He's the all-time hits leader. And I'll ask you this. Is baseball better with Pete on the sideline or in baseball? He's a tremendous ambassador for the game.
Let me ask you, if you wouldn't mind explaining just for our listeners quickly what the sign stealing was. I know that maybe we've all seen some videos now of like the banging that was going on to sort of give batters the idea of what pitch might be coming next.
Well, certainly stealing signs is nothing new in baseball. If you go back to 1951 with the shot heard around the world with Bobby Thompson of the New York Giants beating the Brooklyn Dodgers in a playoff game, they claimed that there were people in the stands and also people in the clubhouse at dead center field getting signs back to the dugout. So basically, it's been a tradition basically in baseball, but you can't do it electronically or technology-wise. You can't do it that way. And what was happening right now, there was a TV set sending signals to the dugout, and players were banging on garbage cans in the dugout for various pitches, like maybe one or two bangs for a fastball or a curve or whatever it may be. So basically, you could steal signs, but you can't do it through technology.
And now compare that to what Pete...
shame on baseball.
Yeah. Compare that to what Pete Rose did for us.
Pete Rose bet on the game of baseball, which obviously is a rule in every single clubhouse in Major League Baseball. You cannot bet on the game of baseball. I get it. I understand that. He broke the rule. But the point is this. He didn't throw a game. And he did it as a manager. He didn't do it as a player. So basically, it's apples and oranges. You got a team that the Yankees are incensed right now. C.C. Sabathia says that they should have won the World Series in 2017 because the Yankees had a better team and they didn't cheat. And the Astros did.
I have to note that local judge Norbert Nadel emailed our newsroom, and I guess he presided over a case involving Pete Rose. And he's on Pete Rose's side now.
He should be. I think Pete's got a case here, but I think that you have a commissioner right now in Robert Manfred who's stubborn as a rock, and I don't think he's going to budge. And there are some people right now that don't think he should budge. But, you know, just get Pete back in there so he can get into the Hall of Fame while he's still alive. That's all. He's not going to play anymore. He's not going to get involved in the game. No one's going to hire him as a manager or a general manager. We just want him back in baseball so he's off the ineligible list so the people, the Baseball Writers of America, can vote him in the Hall of Fame where he justly deserves to be.
Let's talk about football now. Luke Fickell, the head coach at the University of Cincinnati. It looks like there's an opening at Michigan State, which is interesting because the man leaving that Michigan State job, Mark D'Antonio, was previously head coach at the University of Cincinnati before the Spartans came down and took him away. It looks like they want to turn to Cincinnati again, possibly. What are your thoughts?
Well, first I want to talk about Mark D'Antonio, which right now I find out to be he's a fake, a fraud, and a phony. I'll tell you why I say that. Because when he was at University of Cincinnati, he used to carry around the so-called football Bible that he made the kids read. And he said, we got to follow these rules. He was a semi-religious freak. That's what he was. And he had a lot of success here. He goes to Michigan State, and he hires rapists. He gets rapists coming in there as recruits. So you got to believe that he didn't quit. He didn't walk away from that job. He didn't resign. He was asked to leave. After a losing season, a bad season for Michigan State, coupled with all these criminals he had there on his football team, they said, Mark, bye-bye, adios, you're out of here. No one's going to walk away from a $3 million a year job, which they say he did. And he basically came out in his news conference, which I almost stuck my finger down my throat when I heard it. He said, it had nothing to do with the recruits here. Bull. It certainly did. Now we move on. Okay, we move on to Luke Fickell. It's the same old, same old. UC has become the cradle of coaches right now. I hate to see him go. He's got something good really here. But the point is this, he'll probably want to double his salary. He's in a conference that he's very familiar with, the Big Ten, because he coached at Ohio State. He knows Mark D'Antonio rather well. He knows the system in Michigan State. I think he'd be crazy not to go there. But if he doesn't go there, I will tell you why he won't go there, because he's afraid. There's a fear factor. You know, it's like in anybody else. People are afraid. He's in a comfort level right now at UC. You really don't have to win that much at UC to be there for life and be a lifer there. So if he doesn't go, he's afraid to go. And but if I'm him, I'm there.
And that's something that I wanted to ask you about was you referenced UC being sort of a cradle of coaches, because there have been a few coaches now plucked by maybe larger, more historically successful programs. And is UC going to be stuck in that position for a while? We don't know what's going to happen with Luke Fickell, of course, but you know, they're getting some traction with him, and now are we potentially seeing that Cincinnati will not ever be that sort of final destination for a great coach?
Well, as long as they're in that conference, the American Conference, I mean, I think it's going to happen. I mean, you want to be in a top five conference, which basically the Big Ten is. Number two, you don't want to play in a bowl game against a 6-6 team after New Year's Day. I mean, it's embarrassing what they've done, going down to Birmingham, Alabama, to play in a bowl game. I mean, He's tasted the glory working at Ohio State. He's got it in his blood. Can he run a program like Michigan State? I certainly think he can. He's done a whale of a job recruiting here and winning here. But you know what? Let's see what you could do on the big stage and go there. If you don't want to go there, it tells me you're afraid to go. Why would he turn it down? There's none better. I mean, yeah, could he wait for Notre Dame? Could he wait for a bigger job like USC, UCLA? He's not familiar with those places. He's a Midwest kind of guy. He's got contacts in the state of Ohio. He perfects him. It's a perfect fit. If he doesn't go, he's afraid.
I wonder if you agree with this sort of perception that I have, and I hope I don't upset anyone, but UC football's program is somewhat similar to Xavier's basketball in recent years, where you get a great coach who does a lot of great things, and then a bigger program comes along and maybe breaks your heart. That both programs have been fortunate to get some good people just in a nice cycle, but you really don't have that long-time coach thing.
Excellent point, and there's been a lot of great coaches at Xavier that have gone on, and you look right now at University of Louisville, what's going on right there, a tremendous season they're having right now. But, you know, at least Xavier plays in a major conference. The Big East is a top three conference in the country. I mean, really, it's a meat grinder every single night that the teams that they play, the Villanovas, the Providences, St. John's, whatever it may be, every night, in and out, you're playing tough teams. I mean, look at UC, who they're playing. I mean, the best games they play was non-conference. They played Ohio State before the conference season began. So basically, you're playing schools that really and truly, they're afterthoughts. No one cares. They're not on the major map.
Yeah, it's a conference realignment strikes Cincinnati again. Andy Furman, right. You always do a great job in sort of transitioning to public radio when you talk to us. You did get a little sports radio-y for us today, and we do appreciate your passion and your time for being with us. Andy, thank you so much.
Have a great weekend.
You
thank
too.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Elise Meckler. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.